Hello and welcome to All Indians Matter. I am Ashraf Engineer. We are barely into 2021, but already there have been at least 8 internet shutdowns in India. The latest round followed the protest by farmers against 3 new agriculture laws. It seems to be the first thing the government does when faced with opposition. India shuts down the internet more than any other country. According to internetshutdowns.in, India shut the net 106 times in 2019, with Venezuela considered an authoritarian regime, a distant second with just 12 such instances. Most shutdowns occur during or after incidents of police brutality and protests, and they are all too often used as a tool to stifle dissent.
All Indians Matter.
We have on the show Radhika Jalani, who is a counsel at the Software Freedom Law Center, where she's been doing an immense amount of work around internet shutdowns. Earlier, she was Digital Defender Fellow at the center. Radhika is a philosophy graduate and is passionate about culture, environment, mental health, technology, and human rights. Welcome to the show, Radhika.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Radhika, I want to give some perspective right at the start. In 2019, India had 106 internet shutdowns. In 2020, it was 83. Why does the government keep ordering them?
So there are a variety of reasons why the government likes, you know, using the kill switch to shut off the internet. Now, if you know that the internet was off in Jammu and Kashmir since the eve of 5th August 2019, and it's only very recently that full 4G internet has come back. Even when there was 2G in Kashmir, in Jammu and Kashmir, there were times when they had, when they had even restricted 2G access. This is after multiple litigations and a lot of cases that were going on in court. To answer your question specifically, internet is shut down according to law that is given in Indian Telegraph Act, which was a law enacted sometime in the 17th century, to be honest.
Wow.
This is on, so the reasons they're given are integrity of India, sovereignty of India, public order, public emergency, incitement of an offense. Basically, all the reasons that are given as in the Article 19(1)(g) of the Indian Constitution, that is restrictive rights, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, the most, to be fair, the internet is shut down to fit reasons as trivial as to prevent cheating in exams, to prevent communal tensions, in the case of Jammu and Kashmir, to prevent the integrity and sovereignty of the country. There is no reason that is too small for, using the kill switch.
Right. And what is the most common background for the shutdowns? Is it dissent? Do they help suppress coverage when there is state violence, like the kind we've seen during the recent farmer protests?
So, again, the kill switch is a very recent mechanism to suppress dissent because, of course, internet has blown like nothing ever has, right? And, people don't even, no government can understand the power of social media, the power of internet. And I think it's a knee-jerk reaction for them. For they think that if they're going to kill WhatsApp, if they're going to kill Twitter, then there won't be any call for protest, there won't be any videos, there won't be any dissent. But of course, this is not the official reason. A lot of orders that we get are where state governments or even the central government has ordered internet shutdown. It's said to prevent fake rumor mongering, right? But unfortunately, social media is a very, very small part of the internet. There's a lot more to the internet than that. I think during CAA protests, which were happening at end of 2019 and beginning of 2020, there were also a series of internet shutdowns that went down. And again, we see them again now during the farmers' protest. So, I mean, in a way, you can say that, it's to go fake rumor mongering.
Right. But what impact does a shutdown have on the lives of the common people? Elaborate, especially on the impact during the COVID-19 lockdown.
Oh, it's a terrible impact. You can imagine that all of us have been working from home. We're recording this podcast from our own houses, right? Using an internet connection. Without internet, how are you going to ever function? So I remember my first experience of an internet shutdown was 19 December 2019, we were at Mandi House and there was a big call for protest against CAA. And suddenly, you know, like there were four of us and Section 144 was imposed. No, actually, there were five of us and Section 144 was imposed. So we were not walking in groups of five. We had separated and there were two of us and three of us. And then there were these rumors that, you know, the police have started lateral charging and they're starting to detain people. And at the same time, the internet went off. So we were separated. So there was no way that we knew if the other person was safe. And there were no, of course, there were also no call facilities or SMS facilities available. You couldn't share your location. Then during the protests also, you know, like we were trying to understand what's happening. And no news, nothing was working. And at the same time, for the longest time, you know, we were worried about our safety. We were worried that if, you know, if we had an emergency, we won't be able to get in touch. And this is, I think, worse for women and marginalized communities because they're again more prone to harassment. But an internet shutdown, like if you see it in you know, during COVID-19, there was a shutdown in Hooghly, I think in Calcutta, I think in May. There was a six day long shutdown. This is again in 2020. The SFLC also moved to court about it. So people couldn't order medicines. This is at the peak of the pandemic. People couldn't order medicines. Nobody could work. All of your schools and colleges are online. So you don't have any education, access material. Like, again, I mean, what do you do? We're so dependent on the internet that there is nothing that you can do. On 26 January, I think this year, I think this again happened. And, you know, we had to do statements. We had to, you know, get the word out because we run an internet shutdown tracker. And we are the one people rely on in case there is no internet to tell us that there is no internet. Ironic. But my internet wasn't working. There was no Wi-Fi. There was no hotspot. And, you know, I slept at 10 o'clock at night. I've never slept at 10 o'clock at night because there was just nothing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's an important point. You know, we virtually live our lives digitally now. So there are implications on our education. There are implications on livelihood and so on. Which brings me to the question, are these shutdowns legal?
Yes. Unfortunately, we have something called temporary telecom suspension rules that were notified in 2017. Before that, Section 144 of the CRPC was used to impose internet shutdowns. So they're very much legal. I wouldn't call them proportionate, but I would definitely call them legal. Again, there is again a whole lot of other problems where orders are not published. Compliances are not made. Like there's hardly any cases where you will ever see a review committee meeting happening.
Right.
But yeah, but like they are legal.
Right. The longest shutdown, Radhika, was in Kashmir from August 4, 2019, as you mentioned, after its special status was withdrawn. And it was only on January 25, 2020 that 2G services were restored. But again, that was for whitelisted websites. And even at that time, social media was not allowed. Again, the very next day, services were snapped due to security concerns for Republic Day. And it was only on March 4, 2020 that the whitelist was removed. But again, at that time, the internet could only be accessed using 2G. Now, the Supreme Court has said that indefinite shutdowns are unconstitutional. So how does something like this still happen?
Again, so this the answer for this you'll find in the Foundation of Media Professionals versus Union of India. This is the case which was filed where they said that, you know, even after Anuradha Bhusin, that was the landmark judgment on internet shutdown. That is again on Kashmir, where Ms. Anuradha Bhusin, who's the editor of Kashmir Times, moved to the Supreme Court saying that, you know, they couldn't practice any of their rights because there was no internet. Again, your right to trade and profession is practiced through internet. Your right to education is practiced through the internet. So she moved to court then and the Supreme Court said, again, all of the things that you just said, that internet shutdowns cannot be indefinite and that the orders need to be published. They cannot be used and done under CRPC, Section 144. There is a specific law for that. So in Foundation of Media Professionals, that's what they said, that, we don't have internet on 2G. Things don't work. And of course, the sites have become bigger. We have a series of videos on our Twitter handle that is NetShutdown, where you can see how difficult it is to open a website on 2G, right? And again, if a website is directing you to some other website, and if that's not whitelisted, so that won't open.
Right.
And it's like, it takes you more than 2 to 3 minutes to open even a bank website. And that's just not feasible. So in this case, the Foundation of Media Professionals, the government said that they made a special committee to look into this. They said that, you know, we are going to, and one of the major contentions that was faced by the Union of India, the councils representing Union of India, was that there's a major security concern when it comes to, letting people in that region use the internet. And that has been the response that has been used for the longest time. And then after that, there were only two districts, I think Udhampur and Ganderbal, that were allowed 4G access on a trial basis. So that's 2 out of 22 districts.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. But given what the Supreme Court said, does the government actually announce such shutdowns in advance, and also when that shutdown will end?
After Anuradha, we see more of that, right? Okay, so I'll give you the recent case of Haryana. In Haryana, in three districts, Jhajjar, Sonipat, and Palwal, an internet shutdown started on 27th January. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be till 28th January, but it was extended again. So it was finally lifted on 6th February. That is, again, 10 days after, you know, it was imposed. Then from 3, it spread to 17 districts. Haryana in total, I think, has 21 or 22 districts, right? And on and off, for some districts it was happening, for some it was lifted. So this went on for 10 days. And again, in the middle of that, there was, of course, the shutdowns. There were, you know, 3 shutdown orders for the border area, Singhu, Tikri, and Ghazipur border area right? But
These are actually where the farmer protests are most intense. I just want to give that perspective to the listeners.
Yeah, that's where the farmers' protests are most intense. But at the same time, like also on 26th January, I remember the order was, I think, only valid till 12 o'clock at night, right? But I don't think my internet came back till the second day by 12. And I'm nowhere near the farmers' protest. Right? So even at times, so I would say that now there are more instances where you've started of getting the orders. But they're again very difficult to obtain. Most of the RDI applications go unanswered, or they're denied on various things, based on various things. But yeah, like, it's, of course, it's better than it was in 2017, but it's still not how it should be.
Right. And what do such frequent shutdowns mean for our democracy and rights?
I mean, you know, if you check the Facebook transparency report, wait, I'm just going to open this up on my laptop and read that out to you.
Sure.
But the Facebook transparency report says that India had a total, so this is between, I think, January to June. So this is between January to June 2020. Mm-hmm. India had 42 disruptions, which amounted to 38 weeks, 3 days and 19 hours, right?
38 weeks plus, you're saying?
Yeah, 38 weeks.
That's more than half the year, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, again, the second one after India was 12 weeks, 6 days and 2 hours. That's in Ethiopia. Then after that, there is, I think, Myanmar with 26 weeks, where Rakhine and Chin states are still, under a lockdown. So, I mean, I think that's pretty, like, self-explanatory what it means for a democracy. Of course, you also have to understand that India is a democratic structure, and India with its federation of states is very different than other countries. For example, in other countries, say Uganda, say Ethiopia, internet is disrupted only when there are elections going on. In India, it doesn't happen like that. In India, it happens during protests, it happens during, communal tensions, it happens during communal riots. So, but like, I don't think it's a very, India is known as the shutdown capital of the world. And I don't think that's a very good look for us.
Yeah, yeah. You spoke a little bit about the kind of gaps that such shutdowns leave. You spoke about education, livelihood, banking, and so on. But could you elaborate more on the information vacuums such shutdowns leave?
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Suppose, you're out somewhere, you're out in CP, and suddenly there's a chaos, which is very likely these days.
Right.
And you hear that, there's been a police lathi charge that's happened, right? What will, like, as a prudent man, what will your first reaction be?
Absolutely. I mean, I'd go onto the internet to check the news sites.
Now, okay, now you don't have an internet working. Are you going to panic?
Totally.
Exactly. This is exactly the kind of information vacuum that is created in times of an internet shutdown. You check everything online. Yeah? I remember on 26 January where there was a protest going on. People have a right to protest. It's a democracy. People were out protesting. And they had shut off all the Yellow Line metro stations in Delhi. Now, I had friends who were stuck at various points because there was no Uber, there was no Ola, because there is no internet working. The metro station gates are off, there are no bus, there are no autos. Everybody is scared, right? They have zero information about anything, what's happening, and, you know, how do they get back home. And there are also, like, females there, right? And it's late at night. And when you know that there's such turbulent times going on, you can't reach anybody, what do you do? An information vacuum creates panic.
Absolutely. I can only imagine what it's like for parents of young children, for example, if they were in school. I know there was a lockdown in place, but if they were in school and they couldn't figure out what was happening to them, it would have been extremely stressful.
Of course, it is extremely stressful. People can't verify news. People can't verify anything at all. You know, it's very important. So we have to understand that I understand where internet shutdowns come from. Unfortunately, I understand that they come, you know, it's a matter of, it's like it's a knee-jerk reaction to, you know, misinformation, to control law and order. But at the same time, we also really need to understand that there is something called counter speech.
Right.
And counter speech can be practiced over internet. Rather than shutting things out, you should put out counter narratives. You should put out put out verified news. And you know, like in the blue tech ticks era that we're living in, that's not very difficult to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is just an easy way out, isn't it?
Of course, it's a knee-jerk reaction.
Radhika, are some groups more affected than others by such shutdowns? Women, for example, or children?
Definitely, definitely. You know, when it comes to children, all of their classes are happening online. So many universities cancel their classes on 27th January, because there was no internet, and they realize that there's no internet. So, you know, what can we do with classes? Or they can't do it over 2G, especially during a pandemic era, right? You do all of your work online. People no longer go to libraries; they go to Wikipedia, or they go to like online encyclopedias. For women, I would say that it's like bad in two ways, because A, the safety is a concern. Like if you can't share your live location, if you know if you're going out somewhere, and you know, and if you can't book an Ola or an Uber or like, you know, do something, how do you manage?
Right.
Second, I feel that women use the internet as an escape mechanism. We have to understand that the structure of a society is such that as women, you're bound inside your houses. You're not allowed to step out. You're not allowed any form of escapism. You're not allowed, you know. So then young girls or young women take to social media. They take to, you know, exploring different things on the internet. They learn, they'll watch cooking videos. They'll watch, you know, something on YouTube. They'll listen to music. All of your streaming is there, right? So even though it might not seem as an extremely direct impact, but it is nevertheless an impact where you're restricting somebody's escape, where you're restricting when you're not letting, you know, like a marginalized community, a community which is so bound to escape. People can't send, like, a simple thing as a WhatsApp message which gives them pleasure.
Yeah.
You're denying them of that.
What is the economic cost of such shutdowns? I read somewhere that in 2020, the cost in India was $2.8 billion. That's more than double the loss of the next 20 countries combined. Do you agree with this number? And by the way, this India is double that of 2019.
Right. Yeah. So I don't think it's possible to estimate an actual on-dot number of internet shutdowns.
Sure. I think it's a ballpark.
Yeah. In the top 10 VPN report that you're quoting, I think it's a very good, it's very well done, and it's a very good place to start from. But you have to understand that most of our economy is informal. So a lot of accounting done that way is not true. Maybe there's a new juice wale bhaiya who started, you know, accepting PTM. Right. And none of, after demonetization, none of us use cash that much. I mean, at least I don't. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to UPI it, considering our payment methods have also become very great after this whole thing of with Digital India. But yeah, it's like, I think the figure will be much higher, and it will be much more detailed because there are different ways to calculate. And even for us, and we've been trying for a really long time. Even for us, it's been a very difficult task to give an actual estimate of, you know, the economic loss. Because again, it depends on a variety of factors.
Yeah, that's an important point, actually. Yeah, have such shutdowns increased during the Narendra Modi regime, you think? And if yes, could you give us the numbers?
I am not sure if it's pertaining to the Narendra Modi regime, if it's the post-Modi era. We also have to understand that internet penetration has increased so much. Social media penetration has increased so much, which might not have been there before 2014. And so again, the knee-jerk reactions have also increased so much. So for Rajasthan also is like one of the regions that shuts down the internet the most. And it has changed, and it has seen a change of regimes.
That's
but
right.
At the same time, like, I mean, of course, there have been some ups and downs in the internet shutdown numbers. But I wouldn't say that it's just to do with a political party, or it's just to do with like a political ideology. It also has to do with the penetration of internet that's happening, and like how fast internet is going. And again, with the lack of any other, thing.
Right. Radhika, thanks so much for being on the show. There's a lot to think about on what goes well beyond net access to human rights and freedoms.
Thank you so much for having me here. I would urge each one of you to, take a stand against internet shutdown. I mean, I've seen how the trend has changed from people not knowing what an internet shutdown is to Rehana talking about it. But there's so much that we need to do more. You can follow us at Net Shutdowns on SFLC on Twitter. We have a website at internetshutdowns.in and sflc.in. We're a not-for-profit, and we're always looking for volunteers to help us out with our work. Report a shutdown, share your experience of a shutdown. This will help us get your voices out. And we're really, really looking forward to a collaborative world where, the kill switch is not used at all. Thank you.
Well said, Radhika. And I urge all listeners to do precisely as Radhika said, volunteer, speak out, check out internetshutdowns.in, check out sflc.in. And thank you all for listening. Please visit allindiansmatter.in. That's allindiansmatter.in for more columns and audio podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Ashraf Engineer. That's ashrafenginwer and All Indians Count. That's allindianscount. Search for the All Indians Matter page on Facebook. On Instagram, the handle is All Indians Matter. Email me at editor@allindiansmatter.in. Catch you again soon.
Idea Brew Studios.